Fortunato, Arturo, Novak, and Father Jardine rode west for half a mile or so after leaving the old homestead at Alaman, then turned north again. That took them around any remaining threat from Dr. Dare and her companion. Not that Fortunato considered them any real danger anymore. He was confident that he had won. Now all he had to do was finish the job. Novak led two extra horses, and Fortunato led two more. Arturo held the reins of the pack animals. They would continue to switch mounts frequently so that they could move fast. He would have brought more of the horses, but Novak thought that having to keep up with the animals would just slow them down. Father Jardine slumped forward in the saddle, a picture of despair and dejection. Fortunato urged his horse alongside.
Don't worry, Father. You'll be fine.
I'm not worried about myself. I'm concerned for Dr. Dare and Mr. Morgan.
Morgan? Not Frank Morgan.
I don't know the man's given name. He told us he was called Kid Morgan.
Who's this Frank Morgan?
He's a gunfighter. Some say the last of the old-time gunfighters. He's mighty fast on the draw. Not only that, he's smart and plenty tough, despite the fact that he's getting up there in years.
That's not the Morgan I know. Kid Morgan is a young man, still in his 20s.
Yeah, but I heard of him, too. Nobody knows where he came from, but he's made a rep for himself in a short time. A few months ago, he gunned down Clay Laswell. Laswell was fast. Mighty fast. Same thing goes for Jack Trace, and Morgan got him.
Is he connected somehow to this other Morgan?
Who knows? Morgan's not an unusual name. But it doesn't matter, because Kid Morgan's bad enough news all by himself. Green won't stand much of a chance against him.
Then it's possible he and Dr. Dare will be coming after us.
Yeah, I reckon it is. But there's no way they can catch us in that wagon.
What if they don't take the wagon? I assume this Mr. Kid Morgan has a horse of his own. And we left a number of the other saddle mounts back there. They might decide to abandon the wagon, take as much food and water as they can carry, and pursue us to their destination.
He's right. We better not waste any time getting where we're going.
Fortunato thought about that and nodded. He had intended to put some more miles behind them before they stopped again, since there was still an hour or so of daylight left. But it might be better to go ahead and do what needed to be done now. Besides, he had just spotted something that would make the task simpler. He reined in and motioned for the others to stop as well.
Father Jardine, the time has come for you to tell us what you know.
I'll never tell you anything, Count. The Lord will give me strength to withstand whatever you do to me.
You misunderstand, Father. I'm not going to do anything to you.
Oh, my word. You're not going to order me to torture him, are you, Excellency?
Of course not.
Fortunato lifted a hand and pointed.
They're going to do it.
The others turned and saw the two half-breed Yaqui trackers riding toward them. Fortunato had noticed the Indians a moment earlier. They had come and gone like phantoms during the pursuit of the wagon, appearing to tell Fortunato that they were still on the right trail, then vanishing again. And they had refused to take part in the attack on the homestead. Fortunato had been angry about that, but he understood. The Yaquis had been hired for their tracking abilities, not as fighters. Novak and his men were supposed to handle that part of it. But they were Yaquis. They would torture a priest for free. And judging by the pallor that had appeared on Father Jardine's face, he seemed to know that.
Well, Father, it's up to you. Shall we find out just how much strength the Lord can actually give you? Or will you tell me what I want to know?
Fortunato's men should have scattered the horses they left behind, but luckily for the kid and Annabelle, they hadn't taken the time to do that. The extra horses had wandered off a ways, probably spooked by all the shooting. But once the kid was mounted on the buckskin again, it took him only a few minutes to round up four of the animals.
That'll give us each two saddle mounts. We'll take one along for a pack horse.
He and Annabelle went through the supplies in the wagon, deciding what to take with them.
That means we'll be on short rations, because we want to load as many full canteens as we can on that pack animal. The water's more important than food. We're both healthy enough, we won't starve to death in a week.
It'll just feel like we're going to if we run out of food.
When you set out after the candlestick, nobody told you it was going to be easy, Doctor.
Annabelle took a side of salt pork wrapped in oilcloth from a crate and slipped it into one of the saddlebags they were using for supplies.
I think we've been traveling together long enough that you can call me by my name, kid. I'm Annabelle. and you are...
I told you my name.
Oh, come now. Surely your parents didn't call you Kid. You must have an actual name.
Kid will do fine. Let's get these canteens filled, Doctor. We need to get moving as quickly as we can.
Of course.
They draped a dozen full canteens over the back of the pack horse. Then Annabelle opened a trunk in the wagon and took out several leather notebooks.
All the information we need to find Königsberg's cache is in there.
She put them in the saddlebags with the food and ammunition they had loaded earlier.
I have studied it enough that I know all of it by heart, but if something were to happen to me, you'll need to find the candlestick and whatever else Königsberg hid.
You expect me to go on and find those things even if something happens to you?
Of course. What did you intend to do in a case like that?
Well, I hadn't really thought about it. I suppose I'd just kill Fortunato and whoever's left that's working for him.
And that would accomplish exactly what?
I don't know, but I'm not a priest or a professor. What do I need with some dusty old artifacts?
You can take them to Santa Fe and turn them over to church authorities there. I'm sure you'd be amply rewarded for their safe return.
Let's just keep you alive, and we won't have to worry about that.
He had unhitched the wagon team, and when he and Annabelle were ready to leave, she noticed them.
What about those horses? What's going to happen to them?
They'll drift back down south. There's enough graze along the way to keep them going, and they can make it that long without water as long as they're not pulling the wagon. I reckon the other horses from Fortunato's bunch that we're not taking will go with them. We can pick them up on our way back through here, assuming nobody else finds them first.
And assuming we come back this way.
I can, just to make sure they're all right.
That's good. I'd hate to think that anything happened to them because of us.
They'll be all right.
He didn't know that for a fact, but he didn't want her spending her time worrying about the horses, when it was entirely possible that the two of them, as well as Father Jardine, might not survive the next few days.
All right, let's mount up. How long will it take us to get where we're going?
I had planned on 4 days by wagon.
We'll do it in two.
It's almost dark.
We'll ride by night, at least part of the time. I can steer by the stars well enough to keep us heading north, and we're bound to run into that lava field if we keep going in that direction.
That's right. Do you really think we can get there before Fortunato?
It'll be a good race, but it's one that I intend to win.
The kid kept them moving far into the night, until Annabelle was so exhausted that she was swaying in the saddle and in danger of toppling off her horse. When he finally called a halt, he had to help her down to make sure she didn't fall when she tried to dismount. She leaned against him wearily.
This isn't really proper anymore. I mean, for the two of us to be traveling together without Father Jardine as a chaperone.
Your virtue is safe with me, Doctor. Anyway, it's almost a modern new century. People aren't going to worry about such things anymore.
Believe me, kid, people are always going to worry about whether some things are proper. I encountered that when I set out to earn my doctorate.
You got it, didn't you?
Yes, with a lot of sheer stubbornness.
I'd say you've still got that in spades. Not many women would set out into the Jornada del Muerto, whether they were professors or not.
She looked up at him for a long moment, but the night was too dark for him to be able to really read her expression. Then she stepped back.
I suppose we'll need to stand guard until morning.
That's right. I'll take the first turn. You go ahead and get some sleep.
I'd argue with you, but I'm too blasted tired.
A few minutes later, Annabelle was sound asleep. He woke her after a couple of hours.
Everything was quiet. It'll be dawn in about an hour. Wake me then.
You're only going to sleep an hour? I got twice that much, and I'm still exhausted.
I'll be fine. We'll travel until midday, then take a break and sleep some more during the hottest part of the day. We can move on later in the afternoon.
All right.
When she shook him awake, it seemed like he had barely closed his eyes. His eyeballs felt like they had been plucked from their sockets, rolled around in the sand, and then shoved back into his head. Several cups of hot coffee helped a little with that sensation. At midday, the kid found a clump of mesquite that didn't have any rattlesnakes in it and told Annabelle to crawl under the scrubby trees and get some sleep. The mesquites didn't provide a lot of shade, but out there, at that time of day, any shade was better than none. He let her sleep until he was nodding off, then woke her.
Any sign of Fortunato?
I haven't seen anybody or anything moving around here.
Is that because we're ahead of them or because they're ahead of us?
There's no way of knowing. I haven't spotted their tracks, but it's a big desert. They could still be west of us somewhere.
That would mean they'd have farther to go to reach the spot in the lava field that was described in that old journal. Do you think Father Jardine might be leading them astray on purpose?
It's possible. If he is, though, and if Fortunato realizes that, well, I wouldn't want to be the Padre.
He's a brave man to set out on a mission like this at his age.
He had his orders, didn't he?
Yes, but that doesn't mean he's any less courageous for carrying them out.
Yeah, you're right about that. He's got the courage of his convictions, that's for sure.
The kid slept for several hours under the mesquites and felt better when he woke up. The sun had begun to dip toward the western horizon, and the air wasn't quite as blisteringly hot as it had been earlier when he went to sleep.
Everything's still peaceful?
Yes, I haven't seen or heard anything. Are we going to ride all night again?
Most of it, I expect.
Then if we push on all day, we might be able to reach the lava field by nightfall tomorrow.
That's the plan. If they beat us there, we'll know that we did the best that we and the horses could do, anyway.
That's not going to be enough.
No, it's not.
That night, under the light of a three-quarter moon, they came to a vast stretch of utterly flat, barren land. Nothing grew there, and cracks zigzagged crazily across the ground.
Laguna del Muerto. It's an ancient dry lake bed. There's water here only when it rains, which it obviously hasn't for quite some time.
The kid knew she was right. The ground was hard under the hooves of the horses, almost like stone. It took them about half an hour to cross it, and after that emptiness, the kid was glad to see even the gnarled mesquites and the clumps of dry grass. Switching horses regularly, they pushed on through the night, pausing to sleep for a short time, give the horses some water, and make a skimpy breakfast. The Caballo Mountains had fallen behind them, but as the sun climbed into the sky and they continued riding north, another mountain range rose to their left. Those were the Fra Cristobal Mountains, Annabelle explained, named after the same old Spanish missionary who had given his name to the waterhole somewhere ahead of them.
The Jornado narrows down between the mountains and the lava flow. Fortunato and his men have to be either ahead of us or behind us now. They can't be paralleling us anymore.
I'm going to vote for behind us.
I'm not sure you get a vote. That's not how it works.
You don't think that we determine our own fate?
Well, that's not exactly the same thing, is it? Certainly people have a degree of control over their lives, but not completely. Things can still come out of nowhere and change everything without any warning.
The kid had reason to know the truth of that more so than most men, but he didn't say anything about his past. That was going to remain locked up inside him. After spending so much time traveling through the gray and brown and tan landscape, the large area of black that appeared to the northeast that afternoon was a stark contrast. The kid reined in and studied it. Annabelle did likewise.
That's the lava field, the Malpais, as you called it. Scientists believe it's been there for hundreds of thousands of years, ever since a huge volcano north of here erupted.
Not much chance of that happening again, is there?
Oh, no. All the volcanoes in this region are extinct now. The closest ones that might still erupt on occasion are down in Mexico, and even they're dormant.
One less thing we have to worry about, then.
We should be thankful for small favors, is that it?
The kid just grinned back at her and hitched his horse into motion. They had angled toward the lava flow. During one of the stops to rest the horses, Annabelle knelt on the ground and used her finger to draw a crude map in the dirt, showing how the Malpais curved down from the north to form a sort of peninsula in the desert.
We're supposed to enter the lava field at its southernmost point, where there are two spires of rock that form a sort of gate, and proceed several miles into it until we reach a U-shaped ridge with its open end facing east. In the eastern slope of that ridge, in the very middle of it, there's a cave, and that's supposed to be where Albrecht Königsberg hid the candlestick and whatever else he had with him that was valuable.
The kid thumbed his hat back as he looked down at the lines Annabelle had drawn in the dirt, studying them until he had committed them to memory.
The secret of the 12 pearls.
I want to find out what that means, probably even more than I want to recover the Königsberg candlestick.
You want to solve a historical mystery that no one's ever been able to solve.
That's right.
Because you think it would have impressed your father.
Have you ever heard of Sigmund Freud?
Can't say as I have.
He's a doctor in Austria working with patients who have mental problems. He claims that when people do something, their actions are really about something else, something that they may not even be aware of.
Maybe sometimes, but doesn't seem too likely to me.
Nor to me.
She stood up and brushed her hands off.
So don't start thinking you know everything about me and why I do the things I do, Mr. Morgan.
I thought you were calling me kid now.
Perhaps I really meant something else.
She turned and walked away. The kid watched her go. Soon, they were on the move again. They drew closer to the lava field and finally entered it when there were still a couple of hours left until sundown, passing between the twin spires of rock that towered about 100 feet in the air. The ride had been incredibly tiring, but the kid felt an exhilaration that lifted his spirits as they rode into the Malpais. They weren't far from their goal, and so far, he hadn't seen any horse droppings or tracks that indicated Fortunato was ahead of them. He wouldn't see any tracks on the lava either, except maybe an occasional place where a horseshoe had nicked it. The red molten rock that had flowed from the erupting volcano had cooled and turned into black stone that still held a dull sheen, even after all those centuries. They had to proceed carefully, because in places, bubbles within the lava had left air pockets where the rock was thin and brittle. It could break when too much weight was put on it, leaving sharp edges that would slash a horse's legs to ribbons. Surprisingly, the Malpais wasn't totally devoid of vegetation, like Laguna del Muerto had been. An occasional clump of hardy grass poked its way through the black rock, and there were puny bushes that made the gnarled mesquite of the desert look healthy. For the most part, though, the terrain was bare and eerie-looking. Once they were out of sight of the desert, so that they couldn't see anything except the ripples and ridges of the lava field, a shiver went through Annabelle.
It's unearthly. Like something on another planet.
I figured out that's what unearthly meant.
Don't try to tell me it doesn't make you nervous, too.
I'm not over fond of it, that's for sure.
Their pace was slow, and it was almost an hour before they spotted a ridge that might be the one described in the old journal Annabelle had read.
It's so hard to be sure. We almost need to be able to look at it from above.
That's not going to happen unless you figure on sprouting wings. We'll circle around the end of it there and follow it on around, see if it's shaped like a U and if there's a cave in it.
And if there's not?
We keep looking, I reckon.
That wasn't going to be necessary, he saw a short time later as they rounded the end of the ridge. He could see all the way to where it curved, and in the middle of that curve was an even deeper patch of blackness that marked the mouth of a cave.
That's it! Oh my God! That's it, kid!
He reined in and rested his hands on the saddle horn.
Yeah, I reckon it is.
Do we have time to get there and get back out before it's dark?
Well, we'll get there. We can spend the night in the cave if we have to.
That might be a good idea. It'll give us more time to search if we need it.
Annabelle was so eager, she would have ridden ahead, but the kid motioned her back and took the lead again. He was mounted on the buckskin, and he trusted the horse's instincts. They made their way slowly and carefully along the ridge. The kid felt his nerves drawing tighter as they neared the cave mouth. Would they find the Königsberg candlestick and the secret of the 12 pearls inside? Or would they discover that Count Eduardo Fortunato had beaten them to the prize? Finally, they were just below the cave mouth, which was about 40 feet up the side of the ridge. The kid swung down from the saddle.
Wait here. I'll have a look inside.
Are you insane? After coming all this way and going through all I've gone through, you think I'm going to let you go first?
Yeah, I do. Because it might be a trap.
The kid slipped the Colt from its holster.
Stay here. I won't explore the place. I'll just make sure there aren't any nasty surprises waiting for us inside.
Well, all right. But I don't have to like it.
Nobody said you did.
The kid started up the slope, being careful where he stepped. Just before he reached the opening, he bent down and picked up a loose piece of broken lava. He tossed it inside and waited to see if there would be any reaction. When there wasn't, he came closer and approached the opening from the side. When he went through it, he moved fast, crouching and twisting as he swept the gun from side to side. Nothing. Once he was inside and no longer silhouetted against the opening, he dug a match from his pocket and struck it on the wall next to him. As the flame flared up, it revealed a chamber about 12 feet wide and 20 feet deep that was tall enough for him to stand up in. Although the pockmarked black lava was visible around the edges of the cave mouth, the interior walls were the sort of smooth gray stone that had been there before the eruption covered the area with molten rock. A layer of dust and dirt coated the floor, along with a few dried out animal droppings. Not many animals ventured in here, just like the rest of Hornado del Muerto. Other than that, the place was empty. The kid didn't see anywhere that the fugitive German could have hidden the treasures he had brought with him all the way from Europe. Annabelle was going to be mighty disappointed if this turned out not to be the place they were looking for. It matched the description. the U-shaped ridge was a hard landmark to miss. Of course, it was still possible that Fortunato had gotten there first and already had the candlestick in his possession. The match was about to flicker out when the kid spotted a flash of something white from the rear wall. He dropped the match and lit another, then held it up higher as he approached whatever it was he had seen. He knelt to take a closer look. The rear wall of the cave wasn't smooth, he saw. It sloped slightly and was made up of a large pile of smaller rocks, like the tailings from a mine shaft. The kid glanced up at the ceiling. At one time, the chamber had been deeper than it was now. There had been a cave-in, sealing off the rear wall. And in that jumble of rocks, he saw, as he leaned closer, was something white and smooth, although slightly porous. That was a piece of bone he was looking at, he realized. The kid stiffened. He stood up from his crouch and holstered his gun. He could dig out the bone, but he would need help. He went back to the entrance and looked down at Annabelle waiting anxiously below.
Come on up! I want you to meet Albrecht Königsberg.
One of the things they had brought along from the wagon was a small collapsible lantern. Annabelle stood behind the kid, holding up the lantern so he could see what he was doing as he moved chunks of rock left behind by the cave-in. He could sense her excitement growing as he uncovered several pieces of bone. They were badly broken, but Annabelle insisted that she could tell they were human. The kid thought so too.
I figured Königsberg was nothing but a skeleton by the time the roof fell in. He made it this far and then died while that servant of his went to look for help.
Then the candlestick and anything else he had might still be buried under those rocks.
The kid nodded as he shifted another chunk of stone.
They might not be in very good shape, though. That's a lot of weight that came down.
Even if the candlestick is crushed, we may be able to tell what it is. The church wants it back, either way.
The kid continued moving the rocks aside. After a few more minutes, he uncovered something that wasn't rock or bone. He ran his fingers over its smooth surface.
Looks like some sort of leather pouch. There's dry enough in here that it hasn't rotted away.
Can you get it loose?
Hang on.
The kid heaved a large piece of rock aside, and another. He could see that the thing he was digging out was definitely an old pouch of some sort. When he lifted it out of its nesting place in the rubble, it was heavy in his hands. It was a good-sized bag, more than a foot and a half square. A flap on the top of it was held closed by a piece of rope that practically fell apart in the kid's hands when he tugged on it. He pulled the flap back and slid his hand inside the pouch, thinking after he had already done so that he hoped the old German hadn't rigged some sort of trap in there. His fingers brushed metal. He closed his hand around the thing and pulled it out. The light from the lantern gleamed dully on the golden surface of a heavy candlestick and struck scintillating reflections from the gems embedded in it.
Oh, my.
The candlestick was dented and misshapen, but it was still easy enough to recognize for what it was. After more than two centuries, the Königsberg candlestick had emerged from its hiding place. The kid turned and held it out to Annabelle. She set the lantern on a rock and then gingerly took the artifact out of the kid's hands. She looked at him with wide eyes.
This is it. This is really it. I've read all the descriptions. This is it?
Yeah, I reckon it is. What else is in here?
He stuck his hand back in the pouch. Annabelle was still gazing down in awe at the candlestick.
I've got something.
He pulled out a bundle wrapped in some sort of cloth. It was thick and rectangular. He began unwrapping it, and within moments, the cloth lay in a heap on the floor of the cave, and the kid held a book in his hands.
A book? That's the secret of the 12 pearls?
Must be.
The kid held the book in one hand and hefted the pouch with the other.
There's nothing else in here.
Annabelle set the candlestick aside.
Let me see it.
The book was bound in faded brown leather. There was no writing on the outside of it. The edges of the binding overlapped the pages, which the kid rifled through with his thumb before he handed the volume over to Annabelle. As far as he could tell, the book hadn't been printed on a printing press. Its pages were filled with handwritten notations, along with columns of figures and carefully drawn figures and diagrams. He got a good enough look at the writing to tell that it was in German. No doubt Albrecht Königsberg's work.
Can you read German?
Quite well, actually. A good working knowledge of various languages is an invaluable tool for a historian.
What does it say?
Annabelle flipped rapidly through the pages.
It seems to be an astronomical journal of some sort. Königsberg was a scientist, remember? He studied astronomy, and this appears to be a record of star sightings of movements among the heavenly bodies, and predictions of things that Königsberg believed were going to happen in the future, based on the stars.
Like a fortune teller?
People have believed for thousands of years that there are portents in the stars that allow them to foretell the future. In those days, the science of where the stars were located and how they moved in the cosmos were all mixed together with the mystical and predictive aspects of the stars, what people call astrology. Königsberg made a study of all of it and...
She sank down on a rock.
It's going to take me some time to work this out.
Go ahead. I'll go check on the horses and bring them up here so we can tie them close to the cave. We'll be spending the night here.
In fact, it was already dark outside.
Go ahead. I'm going to be busy with this for a while.
The horses hadn't wandered off. There was nowhere to go in that wasteland. The kid found a fairly level spot with a little grass and some of the scrawny bushes growing on it and tied the horses' reins to the bushes. Now that they had found what they were looking for, he was anxious to get out of there, but they couldn't retrace their path until morning. It wouldn't be safe to cross the Malpais in the dark. They would have to figure out what to do about Father Jardine. The kid hoped he could find a place suitable for an ambush. If he could get the drop on Fortunato, the Count might release Father Jardine to save his own life. Since the kid and Annabelle already had the old German's treasure, the priest wasn't valuable to Fortunato anymore. He had taken his time tending to the horses so that Annabelle could work undisturbed. When he finally went back into the cave, he saw that she was still bent over the book, looking back and forth from it to a piece of paper she had spread out on the rock beside her. That paper was covered with numbers. Annabelle added to them, scrawling more with the stub of a pencil she held in her hand. As the kid watched, she scribbled away for a few more minutes, then looked up suddenly.
Of course! That's it!
You figured it out?
Yes. It's worthless, kid. The secret of the 12 pearls doesn't mean a thing.
Wait a minute. I thought you said Königsberg hinted that it was worth a fortune.
He may have believed that, but he was wrong. Look, I'll show you the figures.
Just tell me what it's about in plain English.
All right. Like I told you, in Königsberg's time, astronomy and astrology were all mixed up together. He seems to have been a halfway competent astronomer, but he also believed firmly in the ability of the stars to predict the future. The 12 pearls was his name for a group of a dozen different stars that he believed were going to line up in a certain order at some point in the future, something that would happen only once every few thousand years.
And he thought when they did, something important was going to happen.
That's right. According to Königsberg, when the 12 pearls were in conjunction, they would unleash a power on the Earth like nothing ever seen before, and that the man who could harness this power would be able to rule the world.
Sounds a little loco to me.
Yes, of course, because you're a modern man who doesn't believe in such things, but Königsberg did. And he was desperate to remain alive until 1685 so that he would be that man. But here's the interesting thing. Some of these calculations were done after he escaped from the Inquisition and fled to America. He realized once he got to Mexico that the perfect spot to view the conjunction of the 12 pearls was right here in what was then Nuevo Mexico.
Wait a minute. You're saying that when he ran again from the agents of the Inquisition, he didn't come up here just to get away from them. He wanted to find a particular spot.
Exactly. He didn't make it, though. According to his calculations, the place he was looking for was a couple of miles east of here.
Annabelle snapped the book closed and tossed it aside.
Anyway, none of it matters because while Königsberg might have been an adequate astronomer, he was a terrible mathematician. His calculations of the time when the 12 pearls are supposed to be in conjunction were incorrect. He worked out the date to be July 16th, 1685, but he was off by 260 years.
You mean...
That's right. Even if he was correct about the 12 pearls lining up like he thought, it's not going to happen for almost 50 years yet. He believed he had the key to immense power, but the only thing of value he really had was the candlestick he had stolen.
The kid picked up the candlestick.
Well, we've got this anyway. If we have to, we'll use it to bargain with Fortunato for the Padre's life.
You can't mean to turn it over to that.
If we have to do that, we'll just steal it right back.
No, you can't. You don't understand, kid. Father Jardine would gladly give up his life to restore the candlestick to the church. You can't give it to Fortunato, even to save him.
Now hold on. I know a hunk of gold this heavy is bound to be worth quite a bit, especially with those jewels stuck on it, but it's not worth a man's life.
You don't know Father Jardine like I do.
She stooped and picked up the worthless book she had thrown aside a few moments earlier.
This is what we'll use to bargain with.
The kid thought about it and knew she might be onto something there. Fortunato wanted the secret of the 12 pearls. He might be willing to trade Father Jardine for it. And if the kid and Annabelle and the Padre could get away before Fortunato realized that the book wasn't worth anything.
Doctor! Doctor Dan! I know you're in there! Come out and bring the German's treasures with you, or I'll kill Father Jardine!
Fortunato had been furious when the Yaquis had come back from one of their scouting forays and told him that Dr. Dare and that so-called Kid Morgan were ahead of them. Arturo's prediction had proven to be correct. The woman and the gunfighter had abandoned the wagon and were racing toward the northern end of the Jornado del Muerto on horseback. But after a moment's thought, Fortunato wasn't sure, but that was a good thing after all. So far, Father Jardine had surprised him by holding up under the Yaquis' torture. The priest still refused to reveal what he knew about the hiding place of the Königsberg candlestick. It was inconvenient that Fortunato couldn't really turn the half-breeds loose on Father Jardine, but that would have meant risking his death, and Fortunato couldn't afford that. So the Yaquis had not yet brought the full force of their inventive cruelty to bear on the old cleric. Now they wouldn't need to. Fortunato could simply follow Dr. Dare to her destination and let the good doctor do the hard work for him. Then he would swoop in and take the spoils for himself. That was where the situation stood now, with Fortunato, Novak, and the two Yaquis arranged in a rough half-circle below the mouth of the cave. That had to be it, Fortunato thought, as he called out his ultimatum to Dr. Dare. The place where the Königsberg candlestick and the secret of the 12 pearls had rested for the past 2 centuries. Father Jardine stood in the center of the half-circle, his hands tied in front of him and his head drooping from exhaustion and pain. Farther back, Arturo was waiting with the horses. That was the only job he could really be trusted with.
Dr. Dare, did you hear me? If you want to save Father Jardine's life, you have no choice but to cooperate with me. I promise you, give me what I want, and no harm will come to any of you.
That was a lie, of course, and Fortunato suspected that Dr. Dare knew it. Novak wanted to kill Kid Morgan for what he had done to his friends, and Fortunato wanted Dr. Dare and the priest dead because he never left any witnesses behind when he acquired a new treasure. But despite knowing that Dr. Dare and Morgan wouldn't trust him, Fortunato felt certain that they wouldn't stand by and let Father Jardine be killed. They would try to negotiate with him, and those negotiations would probably involve some sort of trickery.
Fortunato!
That was a man's voice coming from the cave. Not Dr. Dare, then. Fortunato's hands tightened on the rifle he held.
Morgan! Kid Morgan, is that you?
I reckon the Padre told you my name.
That's right. Come out and you won't be harmed. You have my word on that. All I want are the things Albrecht Königsberg concealed in that cave. That is Königsberg's hiding place, isn't it?
He was here, all right. In fact, he's still here. His bones, anyway. There was a cave in, Fortunato. The candlestick is here. It's buried under tons of rock.
The Count felt a chill go through him. Morgan was probably lying, but it was possible he was telling the truth. The Königsberg candlestick might be crushed, ruined, lost forever. Fortunato wouldn't believe that until he saw the evidence with his own eyes. There was still the matter of the other precious thing Königsberg had brought with him to America.
But we have the secret of the 12 pearls. We're willing to trade it for Father Jardine's life and safe passage out of this hellhole.
It's a trick.
Of course it is. Don't worry. I don't believe him.
What is it, Morgan? What is the secret of the 12 pearls?
It's a book. A book filled with writing in German. I can't read it, but Dr. Dare says that it's the instructions for how to acquire more power than anyone in the world has ever dreamed of. A new weapon, Fortunato, the likes of which nobody has ever seen.
What sort of weapon?
You have to figure that out for yourself. But you can do it if you have Königsberg's book.
This is loco. No book could be worth that much.
The book itself, perhaps not. But what's written in it?
Throw the book out here. We'll take it and go, leaving Father Jardine.
No deal. Ride off and leave Father Jardine here with us. Once we're gone, you can come back and have everything that's in the cave, including Königsberg's bones.
That's unacceptable. I'm afraid we're at an impasse, Morgan. Do you know what that means?
A standoff. In this case, I reckon you'd call it a New Mexican standoff.
Ha ha ha!
You really think some old book is really worth something?
I'd like to find out.
The promise of power was intriguing. He had wealth, more money than he could ever spend, in fact. And he had the treasures he had acquired over the years, the things that were his and his alone. If Königsberg had really stumbled over something so powerful that it would make other weapons obsolete, then that should belong to him as well, Fortunato decided.
I'm coming up there!
What?
You and the others stay here!
Fortunato stood up from where he had been crouched behind a boulder formed from the same lava that covered the ground. He strode forward and grasped Father Jardine's arm. Then started up the slope toward the cave.
Morgan! I'm bringing the priest! I want that book!
Kid, what are we going to do?
Annabelle and the kid stood pressed to opposite walls inside the cave mouth, watching Fortunato and Father Jardine climb slowly up the slope toward them.
You know we can't trust Fortunato.
I know, but he's so anxious to get his hands on that old book, he's made a mistake. He's given himself to us as a hostage.
You're going to take him prisoner?
That's the plan. We'll keep him with us until we get back to civilization.
He'll be trying to get loose and kill you every step of the way.
I reckon.
And even if we make it, he'll never forgive you for humiliating him like that. He'll hire killers to hunt you down no matter where you go in the world.
I'll take my chances. All that matters is getting you and the Padre and that candlestick back where you need to be.
Why? Why does it matter to you?
I don't like anybody who feels like he can just take whatever he wants, no matter who else gets hurt along the way. It's not right.
You want the world to be fair?
No, I just want to shoot that son of a bitch because he's got it coming. But I'll hold off if it means getting you and the Padre out of here safely.
There wasn't time for any more talk, at least between the two of them. Fortunato had stopped about 10 feet from the mouth of the cave. He stood there, gripping Father Jardine's arm with his left hand. His right held a Winchester slanted across his body with the muzzle pointed at the priest's head. The light from the lantern in the cave spilled down over them and revealed Father Jardine's bruised, bloody features as the priest lifted his head to look at them. The kid's jaw tightened in anger.
Padre! Are you all right?
The Lord sustains me, my son. The Lord sustains me.
What did you do to him, Fortunato?
Ah, Dr. Dare. You are in there. I was beginning to worry that something had happened to you, since Mr. Morgan was doing all the talking.
What did you do?
I did nothing, Doctor. It was my Yaqui friends who tried to persuade the good father to reveal your destination. But then, I realized it wasn't necessary for him to do so. You led me here, Doctor. You and Mr. Morgan.
In the lantern light, the kid saw the rage on Annabelle's face and knew how close she was to losing control. She wanted to step out there and rush to Father Jardine. She wanted to shoot Fortunato, too. Giving in to either of those impulses might be disastrous.
Annabelle, take a deep breath. Settle down.
She glared across the opening at him, but she took his advice. Then gave him a curt nod to show that she was all right.
I'm not sure I believe you about the Königsberg candlestick, but we'll leave that for later. For now, I want this book that contains the secret of the 12 pearls. Hand it over, and you can have Father Jardine.
If we do that, what's to stop you from killing us?
My word? Is that worth anything to you, Mr. Morgan?
Not a damn thing!
Then we won't be able to continue this negotiation. Perhaps you'll feel differently in the morning. Come along, Father.
Hold it! What makes you think you're going back down that slope, Count?
We were trying to strike a deal. That implies a truce.
It may imply it, but nobody said it. Anyway, I wouldn't lose any sleep over lying to a snake like you, mister.
Have you no honor, Mr. Morgan?
What I have is 6 bullets in my gun and you in my sights, Count. You're not going anywhere except into this cave with Father Jardine, and come morning, we're all riding out of the Malpais together. Your men will be long gone by then if you want to live.
You intend to make me your hostage?
That's the idea.
Never!
Well then, the alternative is to shoot you down right here and now. You reckon those fellas who are working for you will stick around once you're dead and can't pay them anymore?
The kid had moved forward enough so that he and Fortunato could see each other clearly. The two men traded cold, level stares. There was no telling how the standoff would have ended. At that moment, the kid saw a tall, skinny hombre in a dusty suit run frantically into the light. A bronzed figure stumbled after him, slashing at him with a knife but missing. With Fortunato distracted, Father Jardine moved suddenly, acting with surprising speed for a man of his age, especially a man who had undergone torture at the hands of the Yaquis. He twisted in Fortunato's grip and grabbed the barrel of the Count's rifle. He tried to wrench it out of Fortunato's hand.
Fight, Mr. Morgan! Fight them!
Kill them!
The unexpected assault by the priest made him stumble backward.
Doctor, get down!
The kid threw himself forward in the cage. He saw muzzle flashes from the guns ranged around him, but the bullets went over his head. The kid and Annabelle took aim with their weapons. Fortunato lost his footing and fell. And since Father Jardine still had hold of the rifle, the priest went down too. Muzzle flashes lit the knife of the Malpais. The kid saw that one of the Yaquis was already sprawled face down on the lava. The kid shifted his aim and drilled the other Yaqui through the lung. That left the other gunman, a lean, lantern-jawed man dressed in red and black. He had a rifle in his hand, spewing lead and flame as he worked the lever. The kid and Annabelle fired at the same time. The man's rifle flew out of his hands into the air as both slugs, the kid's .45 caliber and Annabelle's .41 caliber, caught him in the chest and drove him backward. He crumpled. That left Fortunato still struggling with Father Jardine. And the other man about to be killed by the Indian who had chased him into the light. The last Apache, thought the kid as he recognized the leggings, the tunic, the bright blue band of cloth around the man's jet-black hair. He had caught up with his quarry, knocked him to the ground, and knelt on top of him with a knee in the man's back. The Apache caught hold of the man's hair and jerked his head up so that the skin of his throat was drawn taut.
Apache!
The warrior's head turned toward him, and the kid aimed his gun between the Indian's eyes. The Apache's head jerked back as the slug exploded out the back of his skull. He dropped the knife and collapsed. As the kid and Annabelle started down the slope, Fortunato finally tore the rifle loose from Father Jardine's grip and slammed the butt against the side of the priest's head. Father Jardine rolled across the lava. Fortunato whirled toward the kid and Annabelle. The kid hadn't had time to reload. Fortunato lifted the rifle.
Now all the German's treasures will be mine!
Annabelle pulled the trigger of her lightning, but the hammer clicked on an empty chamber. She was out of bullets too, which meant they were at Fortunato's mercy. And the kid knew exactly how much that was worth. Nothing. Before Fortunato could pull the trigger, Father Jardine lunged at him from behind, grabbed his ankles, and pulled his feet out from under him. Fortunato pitched forward. The rifle in his hand blasted as his finger involuntarily jerked the trigger. Fortunato's hands fumbled at his throat, where bright red blood gushed between his fingers. By the time the kid reached his side, the light was going out in the Count's eyes. Fortunato peered up at him and tried to talk, but nothing came out of his ruined throat except incoherent sounds. Annabelle reached Father Jardine and helped him onto his feet, and along with the kid, they stood there and watched Fortunato die.
I will pray for your immortal soul.
I don't reckon it'll do any good, Padre. Fortunato's shaking hands with the devil by now. He's dead.
Help, please!
The kid turned away from the corpse and went over to the dead Apache, who was still sprawled on top of the man the kid didn't know.
Please, could you remove this savage?
The kid thumbed fresh cartridges into his revolver, then hunkered beside the warrior's corpse and the man pinned underneath it.
Who are you, mister?
My name is Arturo. I am Count Fortunato's manservant.
Well, Fortunato's dead, so I reckon that means you're out of a job. How's that sit with you?
Well, that's regrettable.
Not from where I sit, it's not.
What I mean to say was, I bear you no ill will, sir. Could you please get this dead Indian off me and take me back to civilization?
Can we trust you?
I give you my word.
All right, then.
The kid took hold of the Apache's tunic and rolled the corpse to the side. Arturo sat up and hunched over.
Take it easy. Nobody's going to hurt you now.
Arturo stared wide-eyed at Fortunato's body.
What happened to him?
That's a damn good question.
It didn't take them long to figure it out. As Fortunato fell, the barrel of the shotgun went up toward his neck and he accidentally pulled the trigger. Call it fate. Call it justice. Call it whatever you wanted to, the kid thought. The important thing was that Fortunato and all his men were dead, except for Arturo, and the kid, Annabelle, and Father Jardine were alive. And the Königsberg candlestick was going back where it belonged. A week later, they were in a hotel in Santa Fe. The candlestick was locked up in the hotel safe until Father Jardine and Annabelle caught the train that would take them back east. There would be a stop at Yale, and then Annabelle planned to accompany the priest all the way to the Vatican, where the candlestick would be turned over to church authorities and eventually make its way back to Spain, where it had come from. Highly efficient guards, paid for by the church, would accompany the candlestick on its journey. Annabelle had asked the kid to come with them.
I'd feel safer with you along, kid.
From what I've seen, Doctor, you're plenty able to take care of yourself and the Padre and that candlestick.
Annabelle had Königsberg's journal to take back to Yale with her, too. It had historical interest, even though it was of no practical value.
This doesn't seem fair. What have you gotten out of all this trouble, kid?
Some excitement. I was able to help out some folks who needed help, and because of us, Fortunato won't be around to plunder and kill to get what he wants anymore.
Because of me. I'm the one who ended his life.
You didn't end his life, Padre. If anything, his own greed did that. You were just trying to protect Dr. Dare and me. I don't pretend to be on the best terms with El Señor Dios, but even I don't see how he could hold that against you.
I pray that you're right, my son.
Annabelle touched the kid's hand and nodded toward the arched entrance into the dining room. Arturo stood there, clutching a hat in his hands, and when the servant spotted them, he came across the room toward them.
Pardon me for intruding.
Arturo came up to the table.
It's fine. What can we do for you?
True to his word, Arturo didn't seem to be holding a grudge against any of them for being involved in Fortunato's death. In fact, in talking to the man as they were riding out of the Jornado del Muerto, the kid had gotten the idea that Arturo hadn't really liked the Count that much.
I was wondering. I mean, I don't particularly wish to return to Italy. And I thought, perhaps, would you be in need of a manservant, Mr. Morgan?
The question took the kid by surprise. He leaned back in his chair.
No offense, Arturo, but do I look like the sort of hombre who needs a butler?
Oh, no, no, I'm not actually a butler, sir. I am a manservant. What the British, in their inelegant fashion, call a batman.
Well, I don't need a batman either. You go to San Francisco and see a man named Claudius Turnbuckle. He's a lawyer. Tell him Conrad sent you, that I said he should help you find a suitable position. I'll stake you to the train fare.
That's incredibly generous of you, sir. If there is anything I can do to repay your generosity, please don't hesitate to call on me.
I'll take you up on that one of these days.
When Arturo was gone, Annabelle looked intently at the kid.
Conrad, eh? Conrad Morgan?
Not exactly.
You can't blame me for being curious, kid. I'm a historian, and I'd bet a hat you have a fascinating history.
I don't know that I'd call it fascinating.
What would you call it?
That was a good question. Dark, bloody, tragic. His history was all of those things and more.
I'd call it forgotten. As forgotten as old Albrecht Königsberg will be one of these days.
The Loner, Book 3, Dead Man's Gold. The Loner, Book 3, Dead Man's Gold is a graphic audio production. Copyright 2009, J.A. Johnstone. Published by arrangement with Kensington Publishing Corporation. All rights reserved. Production copyright 2011, The Cutting Corporation. All rights reserved. Performed by Eric Messner, Kimberly Gilbert, Christopher Graybill, Chris Sheeran, Drew Kopis, Stephen Carpenter, Terrence Aselford, Mort Shelby, Michael Glenn, Joe Brack, Yasmin Twazon, James Lewis, Richard Rowan, MJ Casey, Tim Carlin, Thomas Penny, and Nanette Savard. Additional red shirts by the Dead Giveaways, directed by Nathaniel Perry, produced by Rick Rowan and Dwayne Beeman. Executive producers James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. Dialogue editing, graphic audio sound design, and book adaptation by Nathaniel Perry. The Loner theme was composed by Nathaniel Perry, with additional original music by Johann Detweiler and Nathaniel Perry. If you enjoyed The Loner, be sure to look for William W. Johnstone's The Last Gunfighter, available at road stops everywhere, at 1-800-670-5220, or at www.graphicaudio.net, where you'll find samples of all our Action Pump titles, as well as free downloadable extras, forums, and podcasts. Keep listening for a preview of another Graphic Audio title.
Graphic Audio presents Peter V. Brett's fantasy masterpiece, The Demon Cycle. Book 1, The Warded Man. Experience a world filled with hardship and pain. By day, humanity struggles to carve out an existence in a land that wants nothing more than to see it fall. By night, the broken rabble cowers behind magical wards, its only protection from the relentless bloodthirst of the demon plague. But just as the light threatens to fade away forever, and shadow is poised to shroud all in its wake, three survivors will band together to do battle with the savage horde. Led by a mysterious, fearsome warrior known only as the Warded Man, humanity will wage a bloody war against the creatures of the night. A war that could bring it to the very brink of destruction, or capture its final salvation. Don't miss the savage action of The Warded Man, Parts 1 and 2. Coming soon in Graphic Audio.
If you can't find that Graphic Audio title you're looking for, go to www.graphicaudio.net, where you can order it in CD format or digital download. If you're on the road, call 1-800-670-5220. That's 1-800-670-5220. Or www.graphicaudio.net. And if you're looking for a great way to try out a different Graphic Audio series, check out our convenient and easy-to-store long-haul box sets, which contain up to 5 books of a series. Available only at www.graphicaudio.net. Be sure to sign up for our monthly newsletter or follow us on Twitter.